For WMRA News, I'm Matt Bingay. Volunteers will be cleaning up several stretches of the North Fork of the Shenandoah River this weekend. After months of debate, Virginia's Board of Education adopts new K-12 history standards, the challenges of getting into and sticking with substance abuse treatment, and as money pours in for the fall General Assembly campaigns, Jeff Shapiro and Michael Pope recap the week in politics and state government. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, April 21st. In celebration of Earth Day, volunteers will be cleaning up several stretches of the North Fork of the Shenandoah River this weekend, and you can too, WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
On Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the Friends of the North Fork of the Shenandoah River will be mobilizing cleanup crews to remove trash from the waterway.
When you take some time to do something that is direct and observable to support the health of the river, there's a connection made there that can seep into other areas of your life and decisions that you make that have water quality impacts.
Julia Sargent is the organization's director of programs.
Like how you fertilize your lawn or having an awareness of the impervious surfaces on your property and where that water is going and what kind of state that water is in.
The efforts are part of the Trash Free Shenandoah campaign organized by Shenandoah Riverkeeper Mark Frondorf.
The river is, in some respects, it's doing really well. In other respects, we're experiencing challenges. Two summers ago, we had a 52.5-mile harmful algal bloom over on the North Fork of the Shenandoah.
That bloom prompted the Virginia Department of Health to advise people against swimming in this stretch of the river, as it could cause rashes or gastrointestinal illness. The agency also warned it could be fatal to dogs and other animals.
But in other areas, I think that one of the things that happened as a result of the pandemic is the realization of how important Mother Nature is to our health and enjoyment and well-being.
This weekend's volunteers are advised to wear sturdy, closed-toed shoes, long pants, and gloves, and bring plenty of water and sun protection. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
As climate change warms the air, the same is happening underwater. Catherine Hafner with partner station WHRO reports on new research about what that means in the Chesapeake Bay.
The Chesapeake Bay program outlines wide-ranging impacts from warming waters, like making it harder for oysters and crabs to build their shells. Marine science professor Bill Dennison of the University of Maryland was among dozens of scientists who came together for the Bay Program's new report.
A lot of people have had specific pieces of the picture, but they hadn't seen it all pulled together. And so the enormity of the issue became evident.
Underwater grasses, for example, are already suffering and likely to be driven from the bay if the trend continues. Warming can also spur the growth of toxic algae. That will affect people's ability to interact with the water.
That was Catherine Hafner reporting. The Virginia State Park System is hosting more than 40 events on Saturday in recognition of Earth Day. The Nightly News Record reports that this year's theme is Invest in Our Planet and highlights the importance of dedicating time, resources, and energy to understand the critical environmental issues the Earth faces. There are Earth Day events planned at state parks across Virginia. Activities include habitat and crafting workshops, nature journaling, hiking, and birdwatching, and many other events. After months of debate, hearings, and contentious drafts, Virginia's Board of Education adopted new K-12 history standards yesterday. Virginia Public Radio's David Siddell has more.
After a 6-hour public work session on Wednesday and more public comment Thursday, the board made a few final tweaks. Board member Alan Siebert said the final version reflects many of the changes suggested by the public and experts.
We have listened for months. We have listened for months during public comment. We listened at our visits to the different parts of the Commonwealth.
Board Vice President Tammy Mann noted the outpouring of comments against earlier drafts that some members said had been injected with politics.
When process gets violated in ways where there are certain voices that are elevated over others, and we don't really speak about that in plain language, people are watching.
The Department of Education now has to work on the curriculum behind the new standards. One board member said that means the entire process will likely end up at least a year behind schedule.
BPR's David Seidel reporting. Virginia's new history and social science standards will now include teaching about Sikhism for the first time. That's alongside other major world religions. The Sikh Coalition is praising the addition, calling it an important step to combating bigotry, reducing bullying, and increasing cultural competency. On Thursday, the Board of Education finalized the latest standards. They were developed by Governor Glenn Youngkin's administration and adopted after numerous criticisms over the removal of influential figures and events. Money is pouring in for the fall General Assembly campaigns. Jeff Shapiro, political columnist at the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and Michael Pope recap this week in politics and state government.
So we have the latest round of campaign finance disclosure documents that are really showing us the shape and the contours of election 2023. Jeff Shapiro, what are we learning from this latest round of campaign finance disclosures?
What we're learning is that Governor Youngkin, a Republican, and the House and Senate Republicans have raised a lot of money, but not nearly as much money as the Senate Democrats and House Democrats. I mean, the governor's fundraising has been spectacular. I mean, truly record-breaking. The governor has collected $2.7 million in the first 3 months of 2023. That's almost three times the previous record at this point in the governor's term. That was about $750,000 raised by Terry McAuliffe. You know, this is the money primary ahead of the actual primaries in June and the general elections in November to decide control of the House and Senate.
Well, you're calling this the Glenn Youngkin midterms, but Glenn Youngkin refuses to say whether or not he's running for president. Jeff Shapiro, you say he's been dropping hints that he's not really interested in that at all.
Yeah, he's been dropping more hints. So he spoke with the New York Times. And remember, you know, the story varies according to the news outlet with which the governor is speaking. And he's telling the Times that he's totally focused on these legislative elections. You know, he actually sounded somewhat emphatic about it, though it needs to be pointed out, as you noted, that Youngkin is not saying definitively on the record that he's running for president or not.
So I wanted to ask you about some recent polling from the Schar School at George Mason University that said that people in Virginia, the respondents to this survey, have confidence in the public education system in Virginia. What did you make of those results?
This might suggest that parents, school parents, and Governor Youngkin are really at odds, given that the governor, as a candidate, depicted schools as a mess and, you know, captive to the woke mob. Now, this week, the Board of Education approved new history standards. This is described as a compromise. Remember, the governor claimed they were needlessly woke. Needless to say, this episode is going to leave a bad taste in everyone's mouth.
One more thing I wanted to ask you about was this resolution here being offered by U.S. Senator Mark Warner, which officially recognizes the role of local news as an essential function of democracy. I think people at the Virginia Press Association convention in early May will be really happy to hear that Warner signed on to that. What did you make of Senator Warner here signing on to this resolution?
Yeah, Mark Warner is joining with a slew of congresspeople in this resolution that affirms the importance of local news outlets that would be, you know, broadcast online, newspapers as well. There have been, according to the industry watchdogs, 42 newspapers in Virginia either merging or closing. Quite a contrast, by the way, between Mark Warner, who can be a little thin-skinned, but for the most part can be press friendly, with Glenn Youngkin, who is, shall we say, very selective about how, when, and with whom he engages when talking to the press.
All right. Well, that's all the time that we've got for this week. My name is Michael Pope, and we've been joined by Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Talk to you next week.
Good weekend to you.
Federal officials consider Winchester part of the Washington and Baltimore high-intensity drug trafficking area. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee has the second of a two-part report speaking with those trying to loosen the hold illicit substances have on the region.
In yesterday's report, we heard from drug court administrators in Winchester about how they combine the criminal justice system with substance abuse treatment for people with nonviolent charges who have struggled to stop using drugs. Part of that is helping participants recover from relapses, as long as the person is honest about what happened. But there are rules and sanctions for breaking them. 29-year-old Jasmine Dorsey told me she started drug court last June. She broke curfew early on and had to serve 5.5 months of a 4-year suspended sentence. She said the house arrest imposed in these early phases has been challenging.
You have to text, you know, when you're leaving somewhere, when you get there, when you're leaving there and going back home, like you have to send a text message every time. And that's hard. The accountability, the responsibility is serious in this program.
But she said the classes, especially one called Moral Recognition Therapy, have been helpful in dealing with her anger.
If you really want to better yourself and you really want to stay sober, then I will, you know, push for this program. But that's something you really have to be serious about. Luckily for me, I have a great family, so everybody's close. And I mean, that's kind of really how I spend my days outside of drug court. I have a pretty good job. I do in-home care, and it fits my schedule perfectly and still leaves me, you know, some time in my day before my curfew and stuff. So I'm blessed.
Dorsey advised that anyone trying to get clean by going to a 30-day inpatient program needs to have other services lined up afterwards. I also heard that from Ray Good, the community outreach manager with the Brightview Treatment Center.
They come back to their home in their same place as family, and it's really difficult to navigate that addiction without having services available to them. So I'm trying to work with, you know, like the places in Arlington, Northern Virginia, Virginia Beach, things like that, to be able to say, look, make sure patients have resources available to them as they leave an inpatient program is so critical to their recovery.
Brightview is a private provider offering individual and group therapy, case management, and medically assisted treatment. Good told me they take all types of insurance and help uninsured patients sign up for Medicaid or apply for financial assistance. For a quantitative look at this issue, specifically opioids, let's refer to a recent report that the Northwest Virginia Regional Drug and Gang Task Force presented to the drug court staff. The task force currently operates in Winchester, Front Royal, and the counties of Clark, Frederick, Page, and Shenandoah. One angle is the amount of drugs collected by law enforcement. The report states that in 2021, the task force seized a little over 1,000 grams of fentanyl. Last year, it was more than double that, most commonly in the form of blue fentanyl pills that are made to look like 30-milligram tablets of oxycodone. Their data counted 250 overdoses in the region in 2021. 26 of those were fatal. In 2022, there were just 165 overdoses reported, but 31 were fatal. However, those numbers could be misleading about the frequency of non-fatal overdoses. Winchester Police Corporal Nathan Morris has responded to a lot of overdose calls in his 12 years with the department.
I'm feeling like this is frequently anymore with the availability of Narcan. Now, when I first started, it ranged anywhere from 2 to 3 a week, and then I felt like some nights you can get 2 to 3 a night.
Narcan is a nasally administered medication that can reverse an opioid overdose. Some of those who are revived by Narcan may not call 911 or go to the hospital, so they won't end up in official counts. Earlier this year, Morris assumed the newly created position of Addiction Resource Officer. Next month, he'll be shadowing the addiction response team in Hamilton County, Ohio, which includes Cincinnati, to see how their program operates.
I'm going to be working closely with Valley Health, Brightview, and it's kind of something for me to create. I've talked with CCAP and Rescue Mission. I definitely want to work at getting people into treatment.
If you are considering getting treatment for substance use, drug court participant Shane Bolin has a word of encouragement.
I think the biggest message I can give, I mean, I've been an addict for 30 years. Before I came to this program, I was an active addict of 2.5 years every day. Crystal meth was my drug. And, you know, for those people that are out there that are stuck and feel like there's nobody there, there are people there that really do care. The help is out there if you want it. And there's a better life. There really is.
For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
And part one of that series is available at WMRA.org. The empty seat on the Augusta County Board of Supervisors has been filled. WHSV reports last month, board member Steve Morelli resigned from his seat. Three candidates were interviewed at the Augusta County Boardroom, and Carolyn Bragg was ultimately appointed as the interim supervisor for the South River District seat on the Augusta County Board of Supervisors. She held that seat before for 6 years, and she currently holds a position on the Augusta County Planning Commission. For WMRA News, I'm Matt Bingay. Thanks for listening, and happy Friday!